It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Music filled Big Creek Primitive Baptist Church in Alpharetta this past weekend. More than 100 people gathered there to sing, and not just any old songs, but a style of music that's called Sacred Harp. The church hosted this year's Georgia State Sacred Harp Singing Convention. The event is in its 55th year, but the tradition of Sacred Harp is much older, much, much older. Here to tell us more is singer Jonathan Kelso. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I just said good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
And Chuck Reese joins us yet again, editor-in-chief of the Bitter Southerner, and he recently wrote a great piece about Sacred Harp. It's always good to have you.
I'm always glad to be here. Thanks.
It can be a little bit confusing to people who have just come to this term because it's called Sacred Harp, but there's no harp.
Yes. That's been fun. We've had people show up to churches expecting like a harp performance, dressed to the nines on a date, and then have stayed around for maybe 5 minutes.
It's a cappella, and the word a cappella means it's just voices. There's no accompaniment. But this type of singing gets the name Sacred Harp from the original volume of songs that were in it, which was called Sacred Harp, is it not?
Well, yeah, and it kind of refers to the God-given instrument of the human voice. And so it's the Sacred Harp, God's instrument, our voices that anyone can use at any time.
Oh, you're taking a little bit more philosophical there, which I like. Now, one of the things that you start your piece off talking about, Chuck, is the singing convention, which people may not know of. Now, it's also referred to as just a singing. I'm going to the singing, where they use singing as a noun as well. What is this, a singing?
It's church without sermons. That's the simplest answer.
You've just interested a whole bunch of people.
Well, I mean, when I was growing up, I grew up in a shape note gospel tradition.
We're going to explain shape notes in a moment. Keep going.
But, the church I went to was a little country Baptist church up in Ellijay called Pleasant Valley. And, our schedule was Sunday morning church services, Sunday night singing. And everybody would come back to church after a giant dinner on Sunday afternoon and sing for a couple hours. And so that's what a singing was. And there were those of us who certainly enjoyed the singings more than the sermons.
Well,
I was one of
music
those.
Music is nice. And, you know, a lot of these days, Jonathan, you get there in the morning, you sing for 5 hours, and in the middle you have a big lunch, right? And everyone brings fried chicken, greens.
Man, everything you could possibly
want. That's right. Everything is on the table that you could dream about.
You eat very well. The thing about Sacred Harp singing, and I want to go back to your use of the term shape note, because this type of singing goes back even further than the Americas. It goes way back to England. And they were just trying to find a way, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, for people who had zero musical training to be able to sing together. Jonathan, so how does this work? Now, Sacred Harp singing, as I understand it, only uses 4 notes of what we know as the do, re, mi scale. So you got do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. But
right.
Sacred Harp uses fa, sol, la, mi, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so church music was kind of disintegrating and kind of getting to the point of chaos. And so people wanted an easy way to teach folks how to sing. And so shape notes happen to be that easy way. And so there was the syllables fa, sol, la, and mi, and those were connected with shapes. A fa was triangle, a sol was an oval, la was a square, and mi was diamond. And so once you learn those shapes and you could sing the scale, fa, sol, la, mi, fa. Once you learn the scale, you could pretty much sing any song in the book, and you didn't have to know a lot about music. You didn't have to, fully understand what you're doing. I didn't come from a background where I sang in church choirs or anything like that. Sacred Harp taught me how to read music, and so it was definitely devised as a way to teach people to sing quickly and to sing well and to hold their own part.
Now, can you now then go to a regular piece of music and read that music?
Absolutely.
This was your gateway.
Yeah, it's given me a lot of confidence to sing other music, and that's one of the big things. It didn't just teach me how to read music, it gave me confidence to sing.
So let's listen to a little bit. Again, this was recorded at the Big Creek Primitive Baptist Church in Alpharetta just this past weekend. describe this kind of music, Chuck, as participatory rather than performance art. Why is that?
Well, because it's about the community. You know, like when I was growing up in what Sacred Harp singers called New Book Shape Note tradition, where we used Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do, you know, the purpose was the same. It was to bring the people in a community together to make a joyful noise, you know, and that is, you know, the communal nature is just part of it. Now, one of the things that's really interesting to me about Sacred Harp is that they, the way they even design the setup at a Sacred Harp singing.
You mean like the hollow square?
The hollow square, where, you know, the four parts, you know, they call them treble, alto, tenor, and bass. Each, you know, if you're a tenor person, you sit in the tenor section, but each of the four sections face each other and they sing into the square. And to stand in the middle of that square and lead a song and to hear those voices hit you in the middle is like, it's a feeling that everyone should have. And the cool thing about it is that everyone can have it. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is go to a Sacred Harp singing.
You just got to show up.
Yeah, you got to show up. I mean, you know, like I walked in last year to the convention and John was there to work on this story with us. He was doing the photographs and he was like, get up here and lead a song.
And what if you're terrible, Jonathan?
Yeah, well,
what if you're a bad singer?
Yeah. You're in good company because I am not the best singer. I do not claim to have the prettiest voice. The beautiful thing about this music is that you sing at such a volume that it kind of burns away the chaff. So if I'm,
it is loud, yeah.
It is loud, and it's also very beautiful. So if you have someone sitting next to you that maybe is a new singer and they're not hitting maybe all the right notes, no one's going to turn to that person and say, hey, buddy, you're doing it wrong. You need to get out of here. They're going to just sing with them and nudge them along and help them. And their voices are going to help carry your voice to sing the music well. And you're singing for God and for one another. So there's not really room to kind of tell someone they're doing it wrong, you know, I think.
Let's listen to Jesse Roberts. He's from Georgia. He grew up in the Sacred Harp tradition. And he was speaking to GPB reporter Trevor Young.
When I was growing up, a lot of the books that we sung out of were actually verse hymn books, didn't have any notes in them at all, didn't have any music written, and they would use the Sacred Harp tunes to sing the hymns that were in those books.
And Chuck, this is Christian, but it's non-denominational, is it not?
Well, Sacred Harp has become a very wild cultural export.
A wild cultural export? You mean from the South?
From the South, yeah. I mean, it's excuse me, if you go to the if you go to any Sacred Harp convention, especially one of the big ones, you're going to meet people from all over the world. I went out there last year. I was talking to people from Ireland, Germany, you know, people had come down from New England. It was incredible. And it just, you know, I think it's one of the South's, it's like our stealth export. It's huge all over the world.
It's not very stealthy. It's really loud.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. If you're just joining us, you just heard Chuck Reese. He's editor-in-chief of the Bitter Southerner. We're also speaking with Jonathan Kelso, who's a Sacred Harp singer. And let's listen to a little bit more music, since that's what we're talking about. This is the hymn called Lord, In the Morning Thou Shalt Hear. Hearing them do at the beginning where you hear the leader singing la 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 or la fol fa sol.
We're basically singing a bunch of gibberish.
I'm just kidding.
What we're doing is we're singing the shapes. We're singing the syllables before we sing the notes. And we do that for kind of a multitude of reasons. We sing it one, firstly, because it's tradition, and second, because it helps you actually sing the song. When you know the blueprint of the song, when you know that you've sung the notes once through, you know the part. By the time you get to the words, it's pretty easy, and it really helps aid the singers along by singing the shapes.
So let's talk a little bit more, Chuck, about the Sacred Harp as a Southern tradition and the kind of culture here. Why did this—I mean, we're talking about an import from the Anglican Church in England.
Yes.
So why did this particular kind of singing take such a hold in the South?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the rural nature of the South, because, you know, like, it's the same reason that you drive all over Georgia, and if you're out in the country, you're going to see a little church every couple miles or so. Those churches were so close together because they were built before people had cars. And you had to be able to walk there, get there on your horse or whatever. And, you know, that was your community. And, you know, communities came together to sing together. And I think, though, the inviting nature of it and the fact that anyone can do it is what has attracted so many people around the world. That's a thing that has caused there to be a Sacred Harp singing every Thursday night in Bremen, Germany. There's a Sacred Harp singing once a month on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. You can go every week in Tokyo if you want to. There are so many places around the world where people have had one experience with this, and they take it back with them to wherever they're from. And I, you know, as I wrote in that story, I think this music is uniquely capable of meeting a very basic human need, which is everybody needs to sing. There, that feeling you get when your voice unites with other people's in song is something that just feels so special. You know, and like Jonathan was talking about how an amateur can go into it, the way he described it to me last year, I thought was beautiful. He said, if you don't know how to do it, everybody else will lift you up. And there's something just essentially human about that, that I think appeals to everyone, regardless of their religious background. You know, we interviewed a woman from Germany who, you know, found Sacred Harp because some indie rock band had done a version of Wayfaring Stranger, which is an old Sacred Harp hymn, you know, and that's how she got into it. But whatever your sort of gateway into it is, the attraction of it, and being part of that great group of voices, man, it's a hard thing to resist.
Well, we don't have a recording of Wayfaring Stranger, but let's listen to a little bit more music from this past weekend. This is Oh, What Love. Jonathan, how do you characterize what happens when you're involved in this? Because Sacred Harp singing, which I've participated in before, it's a sport. You are exhausted by the end of one of these afternoons, truly.
It's true, yeah.
And, you know, some of our best neurological studies have shown that there's actual chemical changes in your brain when you're singing with other people. How do you describe that? When people ask you why you love Sacred Harp singing so much, what is your answer?
Yeah, well, like Chuck was saying, I think people need to sing. Like, I think we are made to sing. I think God formed us so that we might sing and we might raise our voices. And so whenever I'm singing and I feel good, I feel like it's because the words I'm singing are true to me, and I feel like I get a lot out of what I'm singing. And I think to sing with other folks, to look across the room, because we do sit facing one another, we're seeing the joy on someone's face as we sing. We're seeing the pain of what maybe they're going through as we sing. We're sharing life with people, and I think folks that maybe don't have a context in their life of going to church, like for them, Sacred Harp singing is meeting people one-on-one through all those, the range of emotions that you can get through singing these songs. There's a lot in there, you know, and you get to shout it out, and that's enjoyable.
Chuck, there's been a real resurgence. What you're describing is sort of a resurgence in popularity of Sacred Harp, and concerts and singings are popping up all over the place. But is there an attempt to try to keep it authentic, to make sure that all of these singings are staying true to the original tenets of Sacred Harp?
Well, you know, there's a Sacred Harp Musical Heritage Association that certainly does a tremendous job of kind of documenting the tradition. But I don't, you know, I've been somebody who's watched musical forms morph together and become something else my whole life. And this one seems rather unmorphable. You know,
how is something unmorphable?
Well, it's, you know, if you go into a Sacred Harp singing, mm-hmm. there's a couple of things that are given. One is going to be that hollow square setup, mm-hmm. and the other one is going to be the Sacred Harp book. It's not like people are writing new Sacred Harp songs, right?
Right.
Well, they actually are writing new Sacred Harp songs.
Are they?
There's songs in this book from the 80s and 90s that have been revised or since the 91 revision, but it's in the same shape note notation.
Right.
Yeah.
So everything that gets written is at least, because it's got to be in that notation, it's, you know, it's going to hew to the tradition to a certain point. I think people kind of turn it into their own traditions without changing the music much itself.
Mm-hmm. And this is a tradition that's been going on for over 150 years.
Yeah, a long time.
I mean, if you went to a singing today, it's going to sound a lot like it did, you know, way back then.
My dad was born.
And that way it'll sound tomorrow. Chuck Reese is the editor-in-chief of the Bitter Southerner. Jonathan Kelso is a Sacred Harp singer. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You can read Chuck's piece in the Bitter Southerner about the Sacred Harp tradition. It's at facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio.